This is Family Electric Ghost. I went live on the air with Alina Hanley, and you're the founder and CEO of Experience Extraordinary. And I want to welcome you to the Family Electric Ghost podcast. How are you doing tonight?
Very well. Thank you so much for having me here and sharing this time together. I'm excited to share with you.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're always happy to talk to new folks. And again, welcome to the show. We are a featured podcast on the Newsly Network. You can see that little icon says listen on Newsly. We're just noting to people if they check out that coupon code GHOST and they've never checked out Newsly, they can check that out for 30 days with no obligation. This podcast will be on Newsly later tonight as an audio version of the podcast. And then we do have your experienceextraordinary.com/connect URL there. That's not clickable at the moment. But that will be able to, you'll be able to click through on that and all the podcast platforms that we're on. We're on all the major ones. So people will be able to check that out. And we'll talk more about what happens when they check that out. But this episode is, we're going to talk about how to experience extraordinary guidance. And before we get to that, we always ask everybody who's a guest a couple of questions. The first two are, what motivates you and why do you do what you do?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for asking those. Those are so essential. What motivates me is joy is actually my motivator. So when I reconnected with my inner essential, what I call the childlike joy, I felt so alive that to me it was more like, I'm going to follow that flow. Like whatever is feel this way, it's igniting something and it motivates me to just keep on going. It's almost like my crack. I just want more of this. So that motivates me. And then what gets me started, what you said, like the second question?
Why do you do what you do?
Yes. And so it's a very similar, it's this, it's almost like, I don't know if I can put words on it. It's just, it does make sense to me. It's the closest expression of who I know myself to be. And the reason why I know that is because there is a sense of order or unfolding effortlessness to move. It's like the flow, like we were talking about music earlier and how the this flow unfold. And it's just that's this feeling of it makes sense to take that next step and do that and keep doing this because it called for. And so to me, it's like I keep doing it because it's fun and it's effortless and it provides more joy. So as long as the flow is open, I'm going to go exactly where it goes.
That's interesting because a lot of times I've been, I was inspired by poets before I was even a musician. And I was always into like the muse, the concept that the Victorians had in the muse. And it's kind of like this flow state thing. And they had these ideas of like Wordsworth and Blake and Tennyson would talk about like the looking glass self. Yes. And it would show up in their work. And it's kind of like you do this kind of internal assessment of you, but you're also connected to the outer world. And and then the muse kind of flows through you and you channel like your art channels like that connection. And it's kind of like you're on a frequency and you get tied to that and it just happens. Right. And but there's stuff going on in your subconscious. There's stuff happening that, you know, that might be really present in your head, but there's other stuff that's kind of like dream state, but you can access it. You learn how to kind of mold it. And I think this happens not just to artists. It happens that, you know, doctors there, every human being finds a way to tap into that and use it. And I'd like to understand like your concept of it within the means that the way you use it for Experience Extraordinary. I think it sounds like you're in that kind of flow state.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's actually interesting because this concept of like you were mentioning of it's to me, this is that Experience Extraordinary. Like how do you experience extraordinary life? It's being in this world, but not made of this world. And because we are made of something extraordinary by design, when we reconnect with that aspect of us that is beyond the tangible and we allow it to flow through us, we are becoming that extra in our ordinary. And we're just unfolding from that flow, from that state. And, you know, we are enabling ourselves to access to opportunities that would not be available to us in different states, right? And so it is, as you were mentioning, it has to do, unless we have remembered that earlier on in our life, but if not, it is definitely through a practice of reconnecting to that aspect of us who that exists, like that artist to me, you know, the artist to me is the inner genius, that version of uniqueness that we are embodying as a consciousness, as part of the consciousness, and following that genius that is only us, that is, that can only not produce necessarily, but unfold and reveal life the way we know it with our unique blueprint. Boom. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that is not extraordinary. And I think that I feel it as people who are musicians, artists who are really taking it to their own unique extreme and that own voice and ways and expression, it does produce very compelling expression of life itself. It's very unique, and yet there's no two artists that has experienced their path that look alike, and that's really the richness of humanity when it is embodied that way, right?
Yeah, I think the issue is sometimes like the vulnerability of being the authentic self, because we kind of get into traps of comparison, right? You get in any kind of like area, you have like canons of like, this is like Shakespearean canon, or you got the Beethoven canon, you got like, you know, Coltrane, mm-hmm. and Miles mm-hmm. Davis. Like, there's all these canons for different types of arts, and mm-hmm. people could say, well, that's just the only bebop guy is Miles Davis, and that's the canon. But then he broke his own canon. He went and created fusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's when you like really are at the cutting edge. And I think, like, I always mention this, like David Bowie always mentioned that mm-hmm. if you're an artist, sometimes treading water is what you have to do. Sometimes you have to go somewhere where you're not comfortable. You're mm-hmm. not comfortable. You can't just repeat what you've done. You've got to go to an area where you're not totally comfortable. You feel like you're treading water, but that's how you live. That's how you create, because you get mm-hmm. on that bleeding edge. And in that zone is it's not always known what's good outcome going to be. And that's where you get vulnerable. And if you don't have the fortitude to kind of deal with the vulnerability and the reaction to the vulnerability, the reaction mm-hmm. to putting out something that's not been heard before mm-hmm. or not been seen before, or not touched before. And then people immediately, sometimes their first thing is say, well, that's no good. And yes. then you're kind of discouraged from being in that zone. And it's really the kind of fortitude or the courage to get past that, even in yourself, the self-doubt mm-hmm. of not mm-hmm. knowing if you should do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. And that reminds me so much of this journey. I was born and raised in France and came to the States. I was 27 years old, and not speaking the language, not necessarily like knowing this environment, like getting into the full unknown. So that, of course, it is uncomfortable to the top. It's, you are not understood, you do not understand your environment. And by design, what's interesting is that the only piece, known piece of this equation where we are surrounded by the unknown is ourself. And so mm-hmm. when we start factoring ourselves into as the most known factor out of this environment that is fully unknown, we actually are, yes, at the same time, it's true, it looks like vulnerability for the outside. But within ourselves, we're actually accessing this inner strength that could not be accessed when the outside is known, because we would defer to the outside and just continue doing what we are comfortable doing. And so there is that double-edged sword, living in this, like accepting to opening new doors where the unknown seems to be the first thing we see. But then that's definitely the gateway through to something extraordinary. Once again, to complete, to expand, right? To optimize.
Yeah, it kind of maybe can get into this idea of an intuitive strategy, because I think a lot of times the intuitive strategy sometimes is like, it's not really clear, but you kind of feel it. It's like if you're a musician and you know all the scales and you know all the chords, then you don't actually have to ask somebody what chord is it, what key is it. But some people will go and they will need the validation. even though they really know what it is, right? So if you start to actually trust yourself and say, well, I kind of know how this feels. I don't have to really question it. I can kind of go with this intuition. Is that what intuitive strategy is? Or maybe you can tell me more.
Yeah. So this is interesting because the intuitive strategy that I use is really a practice of factoring ourselves into the equation first in order for us to choose. So how do we do that? Well, it starts with pure self-awareness and self-discovery and self-realization, right? How can we be using strategies that are intuitive? It's because intuition is more of a flow that comes from the outside in, the inside out, sorry, that the outside in. So what we do is that we're tuning first inward to look for the answer instead of going outside. And so what's happening is we, yes, are confronted to, can I trust what I feel, sense, know, and that I cannot prove, that I cannot justify, that I cannot, right? And yes, because we need to understand that there are different aspects of ourselves. One that will need proof, which is ego, conscious mind, is going to need to touch it because tangibility, it's his way to relate to its world. Our emotional and more soulful, I would say, energetic and spiritual self doesn't need proof because the proof by the fact that of the awareness of that exists. And that is not something we can prove to anybody outside, nor should we needing to prove it to another aspect of us. It is because we have the awareness of it. And that's consciousness being conscious of itself through different density. And the intuitive strategy for me has been the path that I have offered to myself to reconnect to learning who I am in the moment and literally moving through beyond assumption and expectation of what I should be and others needed me to be and for them to be comfortable and really creating strategy processes, system that will systematically allow me to reveal who I am instead of hunt for proof that I am what I am.
Yeah.
And right. And the whole work has been to create these strategies and processes to and to offer them to others who were ready to actually dive deeper into who they were and without me telling them who they are. It's just like, hey, let's take a look at this experience and you tell me who you are because you go through it. It is fascinating, the power of it, right? It's beautiful. And that's where I relate a little bit with music to me, because you can have 10 people listening to the same music and there's going to be 10 different experiences, right? Yeah. And so to me, that's such the power of music that music has to reveal who we are. And because music was not my medium, but I wanted to find something very similar. I'm very tuned to music and I know its power, but I also understand that not everyone is as sensitive to music as others. And so it was more about, is there another way that I can use this experience of music, but in my own genius, in my own artistry. And for me, it's games, you know, like this idea of playfulness to put at ease the sense of self so that we can open. This is what music does to us. It's an intuitive strategy by design, right? It opens us because we have to receive to listen. And so that opens up every aspect of us for us to actually gather the awareness of new information about who we are, our environment, and so on and so forth. Playfulness to me is such a similar medium. It allows us to go back to this space when we were children, when we are younger and sponges, open to the possibility of exploring, discovering without the filter of, once again, what should or would or could be, what's acceptable, unacceptable. And so it's my music, like playfulness is my medium. It's my music to allow my clients, my audience, my participants to be willing to meet themselves beyond what they think they are, just because we play a game or we go through a strategy that vibrate with that same sense of playfulness. And it's very obviously empowering, just like music does, right?
Well, I've always found some parallels. Like a lot of people say, well, you know, if I'm a public speaker, right, they say, well, I'm not a musician, but I would tend to say that when you're a public speaker, right, you have a tone that could be, that actually it's still frequencies like music. And the way people talk can be actually considered in a, like a poetic scheme in terms of the rhythmic nature of their voice and how they, and if you start doing playful actions, you're probably changing the frequencies of your voice. You're using also probably using eye contact in your facial expressions. So it's your creative mind, your creativity is coming into play. And it's all like everybody's, you know, feeling things from multiple sources, like what you're doing with the hands, what you're doing with your eyes, what you're doing with your voice, the tone of your voice, the frequency of your voice, how you end it, you know, you pronounce things. And so those things can still be very much similar to the frame of a music. And so and a lot of times, like what we do with all communication is like vibrations and frequencies. And tones. And I think that once you start to learn, like I'm a synthesis, I deal with waveforms and the idea of like dissonance or noise or harmony or distortion. And you can do certain things musically that you can, if you're in front of a crowd, a certain beat will get that crowd moving to that frequency and they'll match it. And you could get like a harmony to get people like to pull candles out or put up lighters and they're all kind of waving, or you could be very dissonant and very raw like punk and get everybody in a mosh pit. So you can trigger behavior from the frequencies and the rhythms, and somebody who's talking can do the same thing that the musician does if they learn how that works.
Wonderful. Yeah, totally. I totally see it, and that's a very, very good point. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, everything is technically, yeah, frequency, energy. And so how to tune into that aspect with our own way. That has been the fun for me to connect the dots in this way. Yes, between the intangible and the tangible, definitely. Yeah,
and that's interesting about the intangible and the tangible, and then you could also tie it to like emotional intelligence, and maybe you can dive into that because sometimes people, you know, they don't understand what that means or they don't understand how it relates to how they're experiencing the world, and maybe you can give examples and talk about it.
Yes, emotional intelligence. I feel like we, and maybe me coming from France, where there's definitely a different connection with emotions, where it feels like it's a lot more acceptable to be emotional when you're French, not as much if you're American. And right. And once again, there's plus and minus in every way. But what is true is that we are, as human being, emotional being, and our way to connect is strongly through our emotional self. And so the learning to re-engage ourself with our emotional intelligence, which our capacity to feel, is determinant in, especially now more than ever, in a world that is feeling unsafe in its connected power. And that we cannot do it, obviously, the machine. That's one thing that the machine cannot do at this time. And that we can really, do, because that's our genius. That's what the human being can actually do. That's when we are going back into the place of what we already own by design and use it purposefully instead of fearing it because we have been misled in understanding what that is, we can really transform the landscape of who we are with ourselves in our relationship, in our family, in our community, and technically even in our organizations, our business-wise, and obviously the world. And so emotional intelligence to me refer to our capacity of to tune into recognizing, just like the different notes of the scale is, you know, how can you recognize that it's a or a C, and of that scale or that scale, it's because you're tuning into a different frequency. That's the same thing for us. And so imagine the power of knowing oneself through having tuned into our own emotional intelligence and using it as a tool to navigate our own sense of self. Emotional intelligence equals emotional management. And if today, if this is not something we all need to learn, I don't know what is. And the power of this emotional management on how do we deal with others where their emotional management is a little out of whack, it's because our power of empathy that we developed also through emotional intelligence is capable of telling us this person is in anger right now. Why? Because I am in their, like close to their energy field. I can feel the resonance in my own, you know, anger or frustration space. That's it. And so I can respond to what I feel instead of reacting to what I think that person is. And that has the power to transform the landscape again of how we are feeling safe being coexisting on this planet where there's only one right now, so we're going to have to deal with it. And this is the fastest way to do it. But once again, we have to actually, one, be looking at it as a powerful tool that we have misunderstood until now, because we have put it under a vulnerability / weakness experience over a very true power.
Part of the West, like, you know, has really, we have a lot of social mores that like don't highly value vulnerability or empathy. They value people being direct, aggressive, assertive. And if you do something that they foo-foo to them, is like, because like, oh, that's foo-foo. I like, I just want to be type A, you know, alpha, in charge. Anybody else, they can't speak their mind. I don't need to empathize. It's like my way or the highway. And and then you get into these kind of situations, we get triggered and you don't have the discernment to try to understand the other side, to try to look at, like, if you come from a, like a Socratic method, holistic method of learning, you learn to like, there's not just one way to do it. There might be multiple ways to do it. There are multiple systems that exist. And so you, I was a political science major. It's like, there's multiple political systems. Which one's better? Depends on the situation and the era you're in. Right. So, if you come in and say, well, this one's the only way, well, then you're going to get into a triggered situation.
There's no discernment
and no understanding that there's not just black and white. There's lots of grays. There's lots of gradations. There's all these frequencies. Some of them are dissonant. Some of them are in harmony. Some of them are noise. Maybe there's a little bit of everything in certain points. And so that's like, being a, I'm a Buddhist, we try to get into balance. And a lot of times in life, you're never fully in balance. You're always kind of on a tightrope, trying to stay on that rope and not fall off. And you were not perfect. We're human beings. So sometimes you're going to be a little out of balance or a little out of tune, a little out of phase. And if you're in tune, if you're kind of in tune with it, you can feel the out of phase situations. You can feel it in the planet. You can feel it in you know, between people, you know, in the climate. You can say, well, something's out of sync. Something's like not right. And then you start, it's like, well, how can we get that back in tune?
Right. And that's where the emotional intelligence, you know, like to me, it is a compass. It is the power that we can have to actually move. Like the idea of going out of balance is essential because that's where the experience is. Existence is the center. Experience is outside of the center. In order for us to know who we are, we're going to need to be willing to go into the experience and learn how to go back to the center in existence. That going back and that practice of going back is where we learn the power. But yet, you know, how do we move back? Well, we have to have a compass that shows us where the center is. And so that's our emotional intelligence. That's part of our toolbox to systematically go back in center. It makes it a lot easier to want to go explore outside of ourselves and outside of what we know of ourselves when we have a compass to go back to center.
You know, you can come back. Like, I think some people are so fearful of the, you know, other sides of, like, if you think about the bell curve, you get everybody kind of in the center. And really, like the extremes, you get like an Einstein, you get a Tesla, you get a Hendrix, you get a, you know, get these geniuses. And mm-hmm. sometimes, like, they can be on either side of that, right? And a lot of people were kind of been told to be kind of in the middle, to fit mm-hmm. in the box. But a lot mm-hmm. of times, like, it's on those extreme edges that a lot of creativity happens, like you said. And then learning how to get back into that, you know, gyroscope, getting you back in center. So you, yes. but not that you can't go out there, but you know you can come back. But if people don't think they can come back, then they don't want to try to go to the edges.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No. Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. And being reminded, like, in that, this is to me like the, it's a legit fear to perceive from a limiting standpoint that if you go outside, like if you go some, if you move, then maybe like I cannot come back. And this was comfort. So it is legit to me. But this is where the need to understand the greater picture in some ways for ourselves. It's not like there's, once again, one way to explain the greater picture. We all have our own way. But finding the courage to dive deeper into finding our greater picture within ourselves, that to me is the way to, yes, absolutely.
And you don't ever really finish, because some people are like, oh, I want the certificate. I want the, like, until you're not here, you're learning right. that into your next phase, right? And being exactly. a Buddhist, we believe in the next phase. But the idea yeah. is like, a lot of people just want it. I want to be done. I want to hit the thing. It's like, well, you're kind of never really done, right? But people don't want to hear that. It's like, yeah. you can hit certain goals, but then things change and it's like evolves. So a lot of times it's not fully like, oh, this is the finish line. It keeps on moving. And mm-hmm. then you're like, oh, why is that? Mm-hmm. It's like, and they get frustrated and they get depressed. It's like, that's not necessarily a bad thing. That's just life. Like life exactly. is that you're going to, and if you start to learn how to do that and not get depressed by it, but actually mm-hmm. entertain it. Like if you think, like if you're playing a song and you're saying, I'm going to hit the bad note. And you're so scared of hitting a bad note that you don't really evolve as a musician. Mm. Versus a musician that says the bad note is an opportunity mm-hmm. and I'm not going to worry about it. It's going to evolve the piece because I'm going to just go with it wherever it goes. And then I might change the piece of music and it changes over time. Whereas the guy's just trying to stay straight within the bars mm-hmm. and never go outside of it. And then I was like, mm-hmm. fine, you replicate that all the time. You just right. keep on doing the same loop. But you never get outside of the loop.
Indeed. It takes courage to get out of the loop, you know, just to be, it's safer to stay in the status quo and the mass and the, and it takes definitely courage to find ourselves moving, like being the electron that just moves out of the you know, the group and the gathering. But there's so much more to find in everything we desire, really truly inside to find when we do so. And when we're ready, it's really about like, just go for it. Just jump and yep.
I like to talk about maybe like the power of synchronicities. Mm. There's one thing you talk about synchronicities and why do you give power to synchronicities? Maybe kind of define synchronicities and why you would give power.
Yeah. So the way I consider synchronicity is it's a little like a little magic trick, because there are, to me, synchronicities are information that exists at a level of consciousness that I don't have necessarily access 100% of the time. And that when I go access to it, I just see them. And because they belong there, I see them in different form, but that's the same information that exists. And so it just tells me that I have access to this already. And so, of course, this is like an opportunity for me to follow, because I'm seeing something that if I did not notice them, it's because I take it for granted, because this is what I already know. So these synchronicities, to me, they are, once again, compasses to show me that I am moving my awareness upward, so to speak, in the frequency. And so I am continuously going towards a space where there's an alignment between my purpose and what I desire that is intangible. And it leads me to that version at that frequency where that experience is possible. And so it's a synchronicity, like it's synchronicity, not more as a accident or like a, you know, it's like it's a weird thing. It's actually a design aspect of it.
Okay. You're right. Oops. It's okay. Okay, back. You're back.
Yes, that's it. Yep.
Okay. That's interesting because the idea of like synchronicity, I mean, everybody goes back and it kind of dates me to like the Police had an album called Synchronicity. and they had this idea of there's all these things happening all at once in these different moments. And they're all kind of connected, like a parallel moment, you know, happening.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people remember the video on it. But that's just like a high level artistic vision of it. But but it's interesting how you can go through life and not understand certain things, and then you start to find ideas that and then get the name of them and then say, oh yeah, you kind of knew that, but you didn't know what it was called. Mm-hmm. And like the learning experience, like over time, that you get by just like taking that looking glass self and doing the dive, right?
Actually
starting to figure out like what are my triggers. Like, do I suffer from imposter syndrome, or can I access my inner child? Would I be happier if I could access my inner child and not kind of think that things are shameful or things are wrong that actually aren't that way? It's like your belief system, you need to kind of reprogram where you are. So the idea, like the reset button and how, like that reset button, does it have to do with like reprogramming those notions and those ideas that maybe don't suit you anymore?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you know, what's interesting when you were mentioning the analogy of the you know, like the note that is like, oh, I made a wrong note. And you mentioned like, that's an opportunity if we choose to see it this way. And I do feel that that's the basic reset for me. It's the reset is that there is never a wrong note. There is never a wrong experience. There is never a wrong choice. There is an opportunity to transform something. And when we go back to this, to that place, I always say my reset mantra is, because I am the right one for who I am in the moment, I am at the right place, right time, doing the right thing. And so therefore, if something appears as wrong or not as successful as I expected or projected that it would be, I look at it as an opportunity to actually explore what that experience is, because that's something new. That's something that, oh, I didn't expect this. I was expecting something else. So what is there? And that's an experience for exploring that me that I did not see coming. And that's the excitement to me, because once again, it's an opportunity, not something that is coming against me. And I think that this is, that reset is really to go back at that center. The experience is there. There's so much I can control of the experience. What is the consciousness as being aware of is now giving me the information to go back to center and look at it, if this is not something that aligns, that fit into, you know, what once again I had imagined and vision, or and usually it's the part that is the most enriching to discover who we are and explore more about our own inner power, instead of being defined by the wrong notes that are not making the piece, you know, enjoyable.
But I think a lot of times what's interesting is like I've been around a lot of artists that have this like this comparison trap. So they look at like the standard bearer, right? And then they think, oh, I'm not good enough. So they collect a lot of paintings and they're in the loft. They never put them in the gallery. They got a lot of poems, but they never read them in front of anybody because it's not Longfellow, it's not Hawthorne, it's not Blake, so they can't do it. And I think that's where you, you know, trying to be too perfect. And I'm a big believer in this idea of the happy accident. And I'm also in software design. And so it's my day job. And a lot of times, like, we have all these plans about what we're going to do. But sometimes it's like an experiment. Like if you're a scientist, like this accidental thing happens and it's actually better than what you were trying to get. But if you're in the mindset like, well, that's not what I wanted, so I'm just going to ignore it, then you're kind of not living in the present. You're not taking the opportunity because you're so planned out that you can't even entertain anything that deviates from the plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And really, that space of being that you're mentioning that is so essential for me to the creative process and ultimately to this continuously evolving with purpose is to be present with what is. And, you know, detaching the need to project what is as what it should be and disregarding it because it does not look like it should be. And really starting to stay present for what shows up because it's exactly what needs to show up. And every single time that the experiencing the extraordinary of life is really here, mm-hmm. here, right?
And,
yeah. Right, yeah. No, absolutely. And
that's a hard thing for people.
that is a challenging experience because that's a lot of power. And so in order for us to harness that power, we're going to need to find the wisdom first to hold and manage the capacity to manage that power. And that's what challenges us, right? That's what mm-hmm. makes it a little bit of a not an easy, it's a simple path. It's a simple path. We just have to be here and now. But the fact that it's not easy because that's really the wisdom of all virtues of human quality to be anchored in this moment in order for that experience to happen. But there's so much, like when we know what the power that is beyond this, the practice of being in the moment, mm-hmm. it becomes, it's like, oh my gosh, why didn't I do it earlier? But that's the
right. Like a lot of ordinary moments can become extraordinary. Right. Like if you're not like trying to judge them, right? So if you're mm-hmm. judging all these moments and comparing it to this person, well, that person's not you, right? Mm-hmm. So then if you Absolutely. Just think about it, I'm not, it's like it's self-doubt. It's like imposter syndrome. So you're not judging like your present activity as being meaningful. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. that if you actually start to value it, the ordinary mm-hmm. can become extraordinary and you just missed it, right? Because your mindset is that you're missing all these extraordinary things because you're not believing in it.
That's
not arrogance. You know, a lot of people see, well, like, how did this person get so big? They must be arrogant. You think of like a Hendrix mm-hmm. or a Prince or a Michael Jackson in the music. Like, mm-hmm. how do they think they have a right to be there? Mm-hmm. Because they felt it and they decided to kind of push it. And it mm-hmm. does put them in a different frame, right? Mm-hmm. It puts them in a different frame. He's like, well, why do they think they should be there? Because they live it and they feel it and they let it happen. Versus a lot of people, when that happens, they reject it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it becomes really a co-creative process with the greater flow. Not just the conscious mind thinking its way through the creative process, but really co-creating and collaborating with something bigger. And you know, that is, and that's extraordinary in itself. You know, it's we all are capable of this. We all have access to it. It's available. It's free. It's here. What we need is simply to create the discipline to be here and not to commit to this. And to not to really accept all that comes as what is, as that perfection of what is. And that is really moving beyond whatever we have been taught to do and to be since we were born, you know, through school and our training of what we have been supported in being shaped into. So very often we need to work at taking all of this training out to, you know, upgrade. We need to upgrade ourselves with a different
Sometimes you have to kind of, like a lot of times, like at Berkeley, they'll say, like, here are all the rules for music theory. Now, when you get out there, like, break them. Because, like, the only way to really kind of push it is to, like, you know, do something that's a little unconventional. And sometimes it's a lot unconventional, but the idea is like, you have, you're like, once you learn the tools and you start to master, then you can actually start to question the canon.
Exactly.
Question the canon and you say, well, why can't I do that? Mm-hmm. Why can't I invert this? Why can't I, you know, mm-hmm. transpose this? Why can't I run this backward? Why can't I take it inside out? Like, mm-hmm. And that's when people start to really find the magic, because they say you don't have to actually live by the rule. You can be informed mm-hmm. by the rule.
Totally. Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. There's a dynamic around the structural concept and then the flexibility, the flow, being able to being also in the flow with this. And so, you know, having this duality that can be used when needed to be used, because yes, we feel strong enough that we are, there's a paradigm through which we can exist safely, but we are also finding the courage to bend that paradigm because we're feeling that it's calling, we are ready to bend it. It's not dangerous. Mm-hmm. It's not going to come back in our face like a bend, yeah. Right? It's
when art, you know, art is like, it can be scary, but it's not going to like physically, it's not going to cause a fission or a fusion reaction.
Right.
It's like if I decide to paint with a different style or use different colors or come at it from a different mm-hmm. perspective, and that's not in the canon, that doesn't mean it's like, I remember there was a thing talking about Orson Welles and Citizen Kane, and mm-hmm. people were like amazed by his cinematography and his approach and why he had certain shots the way they were. And mm-hmm. when they asked him, he said, well, I didn't know you couldn't do it. I didn't know that you can't film that way. I just said, well, if I have a camera and I see something a certain way, I should be able to do it. So nobody told mm-hmm. me. I didn't understand the film theory. I came into it with no film theory and just looked mm-hmm. at it as like, what can I do that I feel is going to work for the writing that I'm doing? And I said, this is... And people were like, we're kind of dumbfounded. Like, well, he didn't have a big picture. It's like, and it was a big picture. It was a big thing because it was just the idea that the audacity is like, why not? Why mm-hmm. not look at it that way?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Totally, totally. You know, it's very interesting because when I started to do life coaching and it is this world that we're talking about like 18, 20 years ago. It was this idea that it needed to be serious and it's like closer to therapy. Like it needs to be, you know, just there's program and structure that are needed to be created. You have to go through this school or this learning to be. And really that was where for me was just like, doesn't have to be serious. Like what if coaching and growing could be fun and could be playful and could be light? Wouldn't more people want to do it? I mean, to me it's like what if we can dance with vulnerability and really just enjoy the dance? And then to me it was like, no, I'm gonna go the other way. And it's true that I have encountered for probably 10 to 12 years, like it's been about 7-8 years that it's because it has proven its path. But for 10 to 12 years, every single time that, I design a board game, mm-hmm. it's the most powerful transformative experience we'll ever have in order for you to find yourself. But every single time I had like, okay, well, let's do this session. Well, what is it? It's a game. And literally it was just like, I'm going to change my life because I'm going to play a game. Yeah, absolutely. And I remember talking to entrepreneurs, like 7-8 figures entrepreneurs who were, you know, at the end of their rope, like they made it, they made the money, but their entire life was falling apart and they play the game. And it was so beautiful to see this type A personality just opening and just becoming children again of looking at themselves in a way that they stopped looking at themselves, but they say they saw the possibility, the potential, and really reopen new opportunity to move forward, way more in line with their heart. And that's
cool when you find a tool that's maybe not conventional, and you like to have the game, and people could kind of maybe look down on it and say, well, that's not the right way because they've got this like canon of how you're supposed to do something. But sometimes when you change your approach, when you come in with an approach that's kind of out of left field or out of right field or however, and it's not something that's expected, it can have really powerful results because human beings have a habit of like, you know, if you engage them and you make it fun. Mm-hmm. Think about with kids, like, are you going to do better if you actually got the kids like engaged and happy rather than going top down, telling them like, you know, just keep on doing this over and over. Like, are you going to, if you turn it into a game, they're going to probably adopt what you're trying to teach them. If you ever watch Sesame Street and it's kind of a playful game and it's a rhyme, they remember it. They remember the alphabet. They remember the numbers. They remember how to do math because he turned it into a fun game.
Mm-hmm. Rather than and when you think
you got that wrong and you hit them with the ruler.
Exactly. And when we think about it, is the aspect of ourself that is capable of continuously growing is the child. It's not the adult who has already set up its mind or her mind in a certain way that keeps us safe. It's obviously the part of us that is the most, that have the, what I call the qualities of curiosity, fearlessness, this possibility of dreaming, of envisioning things that are not real, of being able to move beyond the, you know, it has never done before. It's impossible. Let's do it then. And so to me, it makes sense to go back to activate that aspect of us in order for us to continue growing, because that's the one that's capable of growing, not the one who is in fear of the collapsing of what if we change this, like what is it, like the identity is going to collapse through it. It's really about, you know, the child doesn't care about the identity. It's just he's in the moment. That's the one in the moment. That's the one, right?
Yeah, the wolf at the door hasn't gotten so imprinted in the brain that you're willing to take on things that maybe as you get older, you're scared. Oh, that's a saber-toothed tiger at the door.
Exactly.
You're gonna get triggered by this thing because it's like unknown where the kid is like doesn't know there's any consequence to that. And that what I found with a lot of creative people, like songwriters, like we like to go kind of to the edge, you know. But people are like, well, that's kind of what are you doing? You're kind of child, you're immature. It's not necessarily that you're immature, you're tapping in to that childlike thing, and it might appear to be immaturity, like when you're in that kind of process. And people are like, that's because some people think like art creation is so serious. And sometimes it's kind of playful and it's kind of like, you know, it's like, well, that's like kid stuff. It's like, well, yeah, that's why it's happening.
Exactly. Yeah. No, totally. I think that there's we are probably more now ready to because that capacity for us to explore more in our uniqueness is, it's a lot more open than any time before, you know. So I do feel like we are on the verge of re-engaging our genius because we have the permission to do it.
Yeah, the permission structure is really important because, like we talked about, like shame and guilt or like the big walls that stop a lot of people from like actualizing or getting on the train to actually getting, you know, into experiencing something extraordinary because they're putting up a glass ceiling that they don't know they can actually break through it, but they put it there and it feels real solid, feels like more like concrete than glass.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yes. Interesting. So, like we talked about, like there are no mistakes, but the idea, like if something that you perceive as negative happens, how do you handle that? Given the fact that like things really should be looked at as opportunities, so how do you handle that kind of negativity then?
Yeah, so to me, it is a little bit of that. You know, like there's no doubt that when we experience something, that there is a response. That we were talking about emotional intelligence, and really, for us to have that awareness of how we are in the moment reacting, it tells us where, like what aspect of us is actually looking at that either negative experience or, and so if it's my anger self that is reacting to something, or if is it my sad self, or is it my guilty or shameful self? that is determining for me that the best response. Because if my sad self is connected to a version of myself when I was younger that actually is reminded of her existence through that negative experience. And so there's no reason for me to block what is, it is. But it's more to look at that version of myself and just now provide maybe comfort, security, empathy, compassion, kindness, so that she is being heard. She knows there's a fear. She doesn't need to end all that situation. I can take the power back today, and now I can respond adequately. And so it's a kind of a loop. The loop is, right? It's at the moment there is an awareness in the emotional intelligence factor. I know I need to create a space between what is and who I am. And now I can look. It's almost like, you know, the Matrix movie, when Neo is slowing down, when he goes backward and the bullets are coming, it's a little bit of creating the same feeling, is that I'm slowing down what's happening so that I retrieve more information to not take the bullet in, but just really what is happening. Exactly. Yeah. That's the same thing, right?
Yeah. And they really, and so, that's amazing.
Yeah. So that's the idea. And that's the practice, because we can, as long as we have identified our patterns, our cycles, our subconscious patterns that are never going to go away. These patterns have been established for some like 30, 40, 67 years old or years ago. And so the point is not to try to take them away. It's more about, I know they're here and they will be activated when the opportunity shows up. And it's not wrong. It's just an opportunity for me to practice my true power, which is, once again, if I have been out of my center for a reason that is brought by the outside, I can always go back here. Why? Because I can identify what has taken me out of my center and provide the adequate response to go back inside. And it is, you know, our capacity to really navigate in these waters of life, those that we can ignite more consciously, and those more unconsciously, subconsciously, that are coming no matter what, because that's what life is. If that makes sense, yeah.
It makes a lot of sense, because like lessons learned, like a lot of times in life, like we have to look at our lessons learned and kind of like, you know, embrace them and incorporate them into our future path, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not exactly just harping on the past, but trying to find out, you know, are there things I can learn from the things that happened and move forward? And it's like is that the opportunity of the bad note? Mm-hmm. Well, it's not really a bad note. It's an opportunity to kind of to change it, right? And a lot of times, if you're a person, it's like, oh, I'm not going to, you know, like you think about it, like as an artist, sometimes I can just hit a recorder and start playing. Or you could have artists that's like, oh, before I hit the record, I'm going to kind of tune up. But what we've learned as artists is like, you know, that tune up time that I didn't record, I really should have recorded it. I actually came up with the best thing when I didn't have the recorder on. So now we have systems that just automatically record everything we're doing. And then we go back and it's like, wow, I wasn't even planning on doing something, but this happy accident is like better than anything I actually directly composed. Right. Mm-hmm. And so to realize that a lot of nuggets happen that way with artists. That it's usually the thing that they're tuning up. They didn't have the guitar they really thought they should have. They didn't have the best mic. They didn't have the best this or best that. But that moment is so good, you actually keep it. And you put it on the actual recording. And that is like the judgment that over time you start to realize it's not always what you wanted it to be. It is what it is.
Right. Yes. That's the key to me. It's the acceptance of what is 90% of our capacity to respond to something we perceive negative, because nothing is ultimately and absolutely negative or positive. It is always circumstantial, and these circumstances are determined by our belief system, our experiences, our emotional landscape. And so there's a lot of information in the determination of something being negative or positive. And when we have a lack of self-awareness, we're going to judge that thing instead of and feeling victimized by it, instead of actually looking at, wow, hold on a second. What I see and I have identified is my own doing through all of these filters on the emotional, mental, spiritual level. And that I have access to through training, through self-awareness practice, to access to and fine-tune, right?
I think that's really important. It's really that self-discovery. But, you know, discovering what you call the experience, the extraordinary. But I do want to kind of unpack your URL. Like, so if somebody clicks on your URL, what do they actually see there?
So they're going to see my contact forms. Really, I'm inviting people to connect. Like, it's not about, like, of course, you can always go back to the other pages on my website. But why not to go directly and talk to me? It's really like you have a question, you want to know how to experience extraordinary, you want to know how to access to your extra within your ordinary. Just go ask directly. Let's have a conversation. Let's have a question answer where there's so much richness, just the connection like that. Those are synchronicity at times, like, oh, I didn't know you 2 minutes ago, but you had the courage to reach out. That says something about you being ready for the extraordinary. So go reach out and connect. I will definitely answer.
So another thing we like to ask people before they leave is, like, are there three things that you think the audience should know about you that might not be readily apparent?
Well, I am French, I said, so I don't know if it's radio apparent, but they may hear it in my voice. I lived in Key West for 3.5 years. That's how I landed after moving from France to the States. And I am married to an amazing man who I met in Key West when I was working for the Navy base in Key West as their fitness instructor.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. That's why I like to ask the question, because you learn different things you wouldn't, you know, necessarily pick up. But that is really important to tell the audience to click on the links that we provide, so you can do a deeper dive on what we've been talking about and connect with the guest. And like she's indicated, that's a way to actually, you know, connect with her directly on that site. And so that we do encourage people, because that will be clickable. When we're fully published, we've been live on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. And then once we're off the air, that is immediately clickable on those channels. And we will be on all the other podcast channels that you can watch or listen to a podcast on by tomorrow. Again, I want to thank you for being a guest on the Fam Electric Ghost podcast. It's always very interesting to get different perspectives. And this has been a really interesting conversation that I don't think we've had before. So that's why we do the show. So that's really great that we introduced the idea of Experience Extraordinary. And I want to thank you again for being a guest on the program.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. And I think that you are definitely at least born for many other things, but this is definitely a genius of you to guide people through this hour of exploring this artist-like and creative flow-like journey. And I really, really enjoy it. So thank you so much again for your time, your space, and your guidance.
Thank you. Have a great night. Great day. I always forget which time zone it is, but thank you again. We always have people come back. So sometimes, like, if you have a book or some other projects, a lot of guests come back and they have a second or third interview. So thank you for being on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Bye.